Hey, Brian.
Hey, Elliot.
What's the talk of the table?
Today, we are joined by Kayla Dice, designer of such games as Transgender Deathmatch Legend and Ritual Magic for Besties. She is a Diana Jones Emerging Designer Award winner who has written for games like Inevitable and Orbital Blues Afterbirth. Today, we are here to talk about Transgender Deathmatch Legend 2. Kayla, welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Hi, Elliot and Brian. It's nice to be here.
So good to have you here.
Great to have you. We've been excited to talk about this game for a little bit now. I used to be a big wrestling fan, so this is like flashing back in my head some stuff. It's a combination of worlds for me, which I'm very excited to talk about.
So, Kayla, we always like to sort of set our goal at the top of a conversation. And for today, we really just want to deep dive into Transgender Deathmatch Legend 2. And, you know, we're not usually folks who are into biographical questions when it comes to our podcast. We like to just kind of get into the meat of a game. But this is a deeply personal game for you and comes from a lot of your experience. So I kind of want to start with some biographical questions. Can you talk to us just a bit about how you got into wrestling and then how wrestling led to this game?
Yeah, it's an interesting story, and it goes back like many years and is also a lot more recent in some ways. I go into a bit in the book itself, and there is an essay from the book that I've previewed on my website people could check out. But basically, I was really into wrestling around the time I was a kid. I actually don't remember what my start of it was, whether it was people I knew were into wrestling or whether it was like video games that were out at that time, probably like SmackDown versus Raw 2000 and whatever.
That was a good game.
But I got very obsessed with wrestling as a kid, and actually there was an age at around age 10, I remember thinking like, I want to be a wrestler. I want to get to the age where I train and start being a wrestler. And by age 12, I stopped paying attention to it. It was the real like prehistory of wrestling. And then it was in, I want to say 2017, yeah, I ended up getting back into wrestling, which was a mix of things. It relate, like, there was stuff that put wrestling back on my mind. There was like TV, there was music, and there was also the fact that I had loads of time. I was unemployed at that time. I've been unemployed a lot of my life. And I ended up watching some more wrestling. And I think actually from there, I ended up becoming a wrestler is a relevant fact to like something, stuff that's informed this game a bit. The actual origin of that is interesting. I went to a convention called Nine Worlds, which takes place where Dragon Me, another convention in the UK now does, but it's now defunct. And there's a wrestling panel on there. And I ended up talking with someone who was on it after, whom she was just saying, oh, you should come to wrestling training. I guess if you tell anyone who does a lot of wrestling training, oh, I like wrestling, they're sort of eager to recruit immediately because they're...
That's the pipeline.
There is something interesting about how that is sort of the so immediate impulse. And yeah, I ended up actually doing it. And so I was training to be a wrestler at the same time as I was like an active stand-up comedian. And I ended up wrestling for about 2 years. The last match I wrestled would have been in September 2019. I was scheduled to have a match in March 2020, which didn't happen for obvious reasons.
Oh, what happened?
Did something go on? the thing is, it's like, the lockdown hadn't started yet, and there was actually a meeting we had where it was like, should we pull this event, or do we need to wait until it gets pulled from us? Because if it gets pulled from us, like, we wouldn't have lost the deposit for having chosen to pull the event last minute. And then we were like, I just don't think we'd feel good if the event did go ahead. So yeah, that was what was supposed to be my last, well, it wasn't supposed to be my last wrestling match. At the time I was planning to keep doing it. I was like a sort of plucky underdog superheroic babyface called Kayla Fizz. And yeah, then COVID happened, so I wasn't wrestling because of that. And now at the age I am now, I do have fibro and I'm not really in a physical condition to wrestle. That wasn't the reason I quit wrestling. The reason I quit wrestling was feeling very disillusioned by the British wrestling scene, specifically its response to a lot of troubling issues that I don't necessarily need to dive into on this podcast. I do cover or I do mention more explicit in the book. I didn't cover it because that's not my story to tell. But yeah, I have loved wrestling. I have hated wrestling. I dreamed of being a wrestler as a kid, and then I was one as an adult. And it sounds like a story about never giving up, but it's really about someone who quit loads of things. And I did eventually quit wrestling, not necessarily because I stopped loving it, but because I started to feel like I don't think it knows how to love anyone back.
This feels like a classic tale with wrestling. It actually really does.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's one you can find very common amongst women in the UK, probably.
Just real quick, because I think it's fun, I do want to know, can you give me the lowdown on your wrestler persona? Finishing move, tagline, costume, the whole thing.
Sure, yeah. No, there is a picture of me in the book. I reached out to an old photographer I knew back from when I was a wrestler and was like, hey, this is me, can I license some photos? So we sorted that out. The name was Kayla Fizz. I had two sort of in-ring nicknames I was using. Like, the Unbreakable Heart was one, which I think got across a lot of the sort of, you know, never give up, almost superhero-like attitude of the character. The other one I was using for a bit was the Trans Torpedo, which was a very fun one. I had, like, face paint on. The first time I was just trying an almost, like, messy warrior style. Then in the next couple of matches I did, it was painted almost, like, as a rainbow, but in a domino mask pattern. She was very sort of superhero-esque and very sincere. Like, in spite of the fact that she had the same first name as me, I completely, like, modified my body language there. I have a quite sort of casual body language. I was like, that doesn't work for this character who is always on and always focused, so she's almost bouncing with every step. The finishing move I had, it was a discus lariat, if you're familiar. It's like a spinning clothesline, if you're not familiar, which is just, I do a spin in a circle, hold my arm out and hit someone in the throat. I was trying to get it over as calling it the heartbeat, but I don't think I wrestled enough matches for that to fully stick. I had on like a skirt, even though I'm not necessarily someone who wears much skirts now, but I had on like skirt, which was like from, it was a sort of like swimsuit skirt, and then I had like leggings on underneath, which gave it a sort of almost like, you know, pants over leggings thing that you might see from like superheroes, which connects to wrestling because that's just like circus outfits. And I had like a heart on my chest with Fizz, which was the name for Kayla Fizz. I still have a top of that because I had that. It's still like just a tank top I wear around the house sometimes.
That's fucking great.
That's fantastic. I'm curious. So you give up wrestling and then you get into TTRPGs at some point between giving up wrestling and now. When you first got into TTRPGs, did you immediately notice parallels, or was there like a moment where it clicked for you that there were parallels or connections?
Yeah, it's interesting because I got into knowing, like, playing TTRPGs in like 2018 through indie games and someone I knew at the time. I didn't start really writing RPGs until like 2020. Yes, no, the end, the very, very end of 2020. And at the time, I did not pay any attention to wrestling anymore. I still watch more wrestling now than I feel good about even, but at that time, I wasn't paying much attention to it at all, and I'd stopped thinking about it, and my feelings towards it were very bitter. And that's when I got into creating games, which was really just a way of occupying my mind while some very like difficult personal goings on were happening. I don't think I remember thinking about them in comparison. I think the most I thought about them in comparison was probably when I was still a wrestler and I became aware of the TTRPG Worldwide Wrestling, where I thought, oh, that's fun, you've got these layers to a character. But yeah, even now, it's the thing, I don't think I approach wrestling the same way I approach TTRPGs. I think of them as at least very different in terms of the art of how I write TTRPGs. I think how I play TTRPGs actually does have a lot in common with how I was a wrestler. But I think really outside of this game, it's something I've not necessarily ever brought much into my work. If that makes sense.
Well, so I like what you said there about how you don't see that many parallels in writing, but you do see it in playing. And I know that a lot of TTRPG folks bring up kayfabe as like a an obvious parallel between wrestling and TTRPGs in that, like, in wrestling, yes, there's this pretend element, but you still get hurt. In TTRPGs, there's a pretend element, but you still feel emotion. So, like, can you talk more about how you see it in a parallel in play, maybe if not in design?
Yeah, I mean, I remember a stand-up joke I had in a work-in-progress show I ended up aborting, where I was making comparisons between stand-up and wrestling, and specifically, like, how there's this unreality to both, but the unreality only works if there's a bit of proximity. And it's a case that, like, if you see me picked up and slammed by someone, you know that hurts, that's why it's thrilling to watch, but you also know I'm okay, so that's why you're not calling, you know, an emergency number or something. The comparison there was to stand-up, where if I make a joke about being, like, severely depressed on stage, the audience knows that's real, otherwise they'd find it crass, but they also know I must be a bit okay because I'm joking about it. Like, they know I'm maybe not at that level. Similar, I think there is a thing in RPGs where, like, you're trying to channel real emotion in absurd scenarios. I think for every individual, then, it's a question of, like, well, how do you approach a character? I remember when I was first playing RPGs, I ended up making an observation at the time of, like, I feel every character I play either talks like me or is like me. If characters were biographically very similar to me, they would talk very differently because I'd try and create some separation there. Like when I played a Monster Hearts game and I was trying to do a character as an autism allegory, I made sure they didn't speak like me, so I had some distance. Or if they're very different from me, I might just speak in my own voice, and then that's almost a way of, like, linking them a bit. I think wrestling and our role-playing games and playing them, there's always an idea of, like, how much are you bringing of yourself? Like, the advice when you build a gimmick is turn yourself up to 11. That's not necessarily what everyone does. I think while that was the starting point of my gimmick, I eventually realized a lot of ways where I'm like, this isn't just about turning things up, it's turning other things down. Same within, like, you know, that's the thing in stand-up as well, when I was thinking about, like, what aspects of myself am I bringing here. And I think it is a case in playing role-playing games where if I play a character, I try and have an awareness of what of myself am I putting into this and why am I doing that? What's fun about that? I'll just reveal something semi-overly personal. Like, when I was doing some therapy, it got pointed out to me that, like, a big fear I have is of being someone who hurts other people. And I was like, oh, virtually all of the characters I've played in role-playing games are people who to varying degrees just don't care about that as much as me. So in some ways, it's a relationship of me exploring something. I can think about what of myself I'm putting into games and whether I'm signposting that or not. I think a game like Terminal, which was Matrix inspired, there's actually a lot of personal stuff in there, but it's not very signposted because I don't necessarily feel like I want to do that. I'm like setting, in some ways it's like setting up. Oh, let me actually know. Now I've just figured out a better comparison here. So the way someone would book a wrestling match when I did it, this probably works differently in other things, is the person who trained us and who sort of organized the show, she'd come up to us and go, okay, so Kayla, you and Daisy are in the opening, and I think Daisy should win. And we'd mainly actually plan then what that match was. We might run it by them. But that's a similar thing in a way. I think, like, maybe TTRPG design is giving someone, you know, a match card and saying, like, you're in the opening contest, you're going over, you're losing. And then, like, playing is where you are connecting. Because no one ever really goes up and tells you as a match when they ask, how was your match? They don't necessarily zero in on the parts which are about performing. But the performance is in there. I don't know. It's in the same way, like, a script doesn't always telegraph, like, micro acting choices.
Absolutely.
It gives you the broad strokes, but ultimately you're the one stringing together different spots and figuring out how things are actually coming together, telling the story in the ring. I feel like we've talked a lot around this game, but let's start diving directly into this game. Can you give us the pitch for Transgender Deathmatch Legend 2?
You're a transgender deathmatch legend. You built your legend with a tapestry of broken glass, bloody fists, and banging slams. You put the HRT in her and put the her on anyone who tries you. You're someone who's been pushed around, screwed over, and bad-mouthed. They say you're too much. They say you're out of control. The world says you're too loud and too violent. You should show them what it really means to be loud, to be violent. They want to knock you for the way you are. Let them know you hit back.
Coming up after the break.
Yeah, and then I feel like the only thing make it more promo-easy if I then, in the intro there, said, and I'll see you, brother, on the 29th of October at the back of Kit Bonanza.
It's gonna be a house of pain. Ah.
That is, that's the heart, that's like the, I guess, the blood and guts of the game there. That's a lot of what it's about. If I'm giving more of the overview of, like, I guess, you know, the, what's the heart, what's the soul? The game is a trick-taking based beat 'em up. It's for two players, though there are variations for greater numbers of players. And it focuses on, you know, one person playing the face, a trans wrestler on an objective of different kinds, depending on which of the seven scenarios you're playing. And then the other person acts as the promoter. You are navigating through a city called Slamchester, and you are fighting various opponents and resolving those bloody street fights via trick-taking mechanics in a card game.
I really, just to kind of start on the mechanics of the game, I really love this trick-taking element in a role-playing game. Elliot and I recently got to playtest J Dragon's next game, Seven-Part Pact, and it has an element of that where, like, you're kind of playing a mini game on your own while also having this role-playing experience. And I remember going into it not sure how that would feel. It ends up feeling really good because you have this whole little thing that you can focus on that also is incredibly helpful in finding ways to role-play scenes. And I think especially in something like a wrestling match, having in your hand all the moves you can do and then choosing how to sequence them is like, oh, I want to make this spot go into this spot. I've got to make sure I keep, you know, the finisher to later and stuff like that. It's very cool and feels really connected to what it is, the story it's trying to tell. I don't necessarily have a question. I just like it.
Yeah, no, I remember the origin for that is someone asked in a Discord server, I think it was the Brain Trust, asking like, hey, does anyone have any ideas for how you do a fighting game? And I went, what about a trick-taking game? And they ended up going with someone else, something else. So I was then like, well, that idea is on the table. But I actually think, I think it's one of the funnest ways to do hand-to-hand combat, especially because I think hand-to-hand combat is like...
Pun intended. Yeah.
I think it's difficult in a lot of like dice-based RPGs because like, while that makes sense for something built around like how impactful is this or how many times do you hit with a ranged weapon, like I think the joy of hand-to-hand combat is in counters, is in blocking, is in people absorbing blows and then just going back. And you can get that by zooming in on stuff more, but I think it's funner if you're zooming in more specifically rather than, oh, I'm rolling for my punch. It's just like, oh, this card is what I'm playing this trick. I'm, you know, I'm going in with the Seven of Hearts. I'm going in with a diving elbow. And someone goes, you know, that's too bad. I'm playing the Ten of Hearts. That's a suplex. I'm just going to duck and weave round you as you come in that elbow and then back suplex you onto the stone cold pavement. I think it is like that preps you to like describe the granularity of a fight in a way that's maybe harder if you're someone who's, you know, not super adept in like language related to that.
I also think that the coolest part of fight, I think this is true for wrestling, but I'm also thinking like movies. The coolest part of like hand-to-hand combat or like close quarters fighting is the hits you decide to take. Like I think there's a bunch of movies where like a character will get stabbed so that the sword goes through them and stabs the other person. It's like choosing the hits that you're going to take that leave the other person more open to the bigger hit you're about to deliver is something you can't really mechanically recreate with a dice-based system. Because it's just, it's up or down. Did you hit? Did you not? And how much damage did you do? Whereas this is like, I see this hit coming. I can take this small hit. And if I survive it, I get now the upper hand to win the match, pin the guy, you know, etc.
It also feels like cards are much better for something that is like a performative or a semi-choreographed style of fighting. Like, it's almost like, yeah, if you were making a like bare knuckle boxing game, I could see why the randomness of dice might make sense. But like when it's this like kind of fighting where it's like, oh, I have spent a long time preparing my move set, and I know that if I do this, you can do this. And like it plays very much to the showmanship of the particular kind of fighting that you're doing in this game.
Yeah, absolutely. And so in part of the advice for all of the players, like it covers some different things. Like for like the face, the specific advice is around like, you know, like remember these core things about your character. But for the promoter specifically, there's this idea of like, hey, don't be afraid to throw a fight. Like, you have the ability to do that. You don't always have to. Don't be afraid to win. In some games, you can beat the face and they're just going to respawn somewhere else, respawn in like inverted quotation marks, and the game keeps on going. But it's also like, but also you absolutely have the ability and influence to throw a fight like a wrestler would. When I played the original game on Party of One with Jeff Stormer, I remember there was a point where I was like, oh, I can read how these trump effects are going to go because we're both matching. I know I could win if I played this card. I'm not. I'm going to play a card that is going to lose me this game because it's the final fight of this episode. And obviously, I want Jeff, who is playing the face, going over here. And that is actually a way. I think, and similarly, you can see that kind of like smoke and mirrors in even, I guess, some like GMing in different systems. I think that's one way where wrestling and RPGs can have a similarity. That fact of like, make it look competitive, but also, you know when to go down.
Right. It's like, yeah, a GM could just pull the I'm God of this world card and here's 100 Tarrasques, but then it wouldn't be a fun game. Like if you're in the D&D example. I love the idea of throwing a trick and throwing a match. I know that one of your cited inspirations is Fox in the Forest, which is a game that I love. And I think like it's so fun that Fox in the Forest took trick taking and was like, what if you lost on purpose? Wouldn't that be fun? Like, what if you like weren't always trying to win? And that's very wrestling. And I love when people take inspiration from board games and bring it into TTRPGs. Were there any other like games that inspired this game's mechanics besides like Fox in the Forest?
I'm thinking in terms of like mechanical stuff. So yeah, Fox in the Forest was like a big inspiration on how like the trick taking side of things works completely. I think I remember I said like, I think I list Stealing the Throne, which is a role playing game by Nick Bate.
Oh, I love Stealing the Throne. Yeah,
it's brilliant. And it's, I made a hack of Stealing the Throne. It's a quite faithful hack, but I think it is one that like just doing that opened my mind up a lot more to like card-based stuff, which is something I now work in a lot for different reasons. Yeah, I think to some extent how like challenges work, where challenges are like small opportunities where you're just beating a single card with something from your hand on a numerical value. And it gives you a like static advantage later on, but also it's like you don't get any of your cool trump effects off this. Often it's like cutting a promo on someone. It's like if you cut a promo on this person who's out to get you, they're going to be nervous next time. Other times it can be different things. That I drew inspiration from there. Actually, the way this has been structured as a text, I ended up drawing some influence from Hieronymus by Laurie O'Connell, where that the layout of like landscape A4, because there I was like, oh cool, I want to make sure that like in a vertical spread, which is what the game has, which is different from Hieronymus, but in a vertical spread I wanted it so you have an entire scenario on one page. Like that was thinking about it as a text, as a reference thing in the world of people playing the game, but also they're like choosing to bring in personal essays to the game was informed by Hieronymus. In terms of, that's another thing. Like the game has trump effects and it has different fight styles you can have. in Transgender Deathmatch Legend 1, it's like everyone had the same moves, whereas now it's like, no, you have different moves if you're a spirited fighter or a dirty fighter or high-flying or technical. That drew inspiration from a game that was a hack of Transgender Deathmatch Legend 1 called Untapped Talents by Running from Skeletons. And I also read another game that was a hack of Transgender Deathmatch Legend called Hunt Through the Bitter Cold. And that informed just like, I think both of those informed like changes I made to the games, or in some instances, like different trump effects, where if I spotted one they'd used, because a trump effect is a mechanic, and so it's just like ultra small, I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. I'll move this in.
Your next favorite game is on My First Dungeon.
Hello and welcome to My First Dungeon.
Hello and welcome to My First Dungeon.
Ho, 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 and welcome to My First Dungeon.
From Sad Space Cowboys.
Kumari takes out a lighter from their pocket and goes, this bar's next.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Let's go.
To Death Metal Viking Cats.
Hello Kitty. You see Melody Tuffington flying through the air, jacked as shit, massive legs, to horny snowmen?
The sad part is that Joshua never gave Frosty a penis.
No.
And everything in between.
It was a dark and stormy night.
We've got something for everyone.
You're a special Gertrude girl in a special Gertrude world. Happy birthday, happy birthday. I'm not a skeleton.
Learn the game, then hear it in action.
That's Snake Eyes minus two. That's a zero.
Snake Eyes, that means that we have our very first plot twist. Anytime somebody rolls doubles, we get a plot twist.
So grab some headphones.
And get lost in a story with us.
I'll be honest, I don't know all the rules of it. We'll kind of figure that out as we go. But do you want to just play? I've got some great stories to tell you.
And remember,
if you're having fun, you're already doing it right.
Oh, fuck!
Universe at Your Door, The Traveler, is a sci-fi TTRPG from Johnson O'Fair. You are the Traveler, on a mission to investigate extrasolar planets, gather and share knowledge, and do no harm. Venture beyond our solar system. Weave a tale of a life lived on exoplanets. Explore the beautiful mundanity that keeps you sane. And build the foundations of an extraordinary person through the memories you carry into the future. Play Universe at Your Door, The Traveler as a solo journaling game, or build a crew with up to four friends and tell a GM-less story of the life and journey you have together. Universe at Your Door, The Traveler is crowdfunding on Kickstarter, February 1st through February 28th. To support this game, just search for Universe at Your Door, The Traveler on Kickstarter, or visit tinyurl.com/universetravel.
Bonds Between is a card-altering duet TTRPG about neighboring dragons bringing their rundown lairs back to life. Bonds Between is a slice-of-life two-player co-op game where you play the kinds of dragons you'd find in your backyard. Working together with your neighbor, you'll add everyday items to your cozy hordes and trade them to grow your power. With your combined magic, you'll cast spells to bring life and order back to your rundown lairs. To solve problems both magical and mundane, you will wreck your deck in the name of dragon magic, recoloring, cutting, and even burning your cards throughout the game. Each time you cast a spell, your deck, your magic, and your domain are changed forever. Bonds Between is currently crowdfunding on Kickstarter. To back this game, just search Bonds Between on Kickstarter. That's Bonds Between on Kickstarter.
I I want to pull out what you said there about your choice to include personal essays in this game, because it is one that I loved in reading over the text. There's so many great lines in here. But like writ large of the game, I'm curious about like what you are aiming to say with this game, like largely, like if like I know that's kind of maybe a big question, but like what is the kind of like thing you want to say with this game?
Yeah, it is definitely a big question, and to some extent like the personal essays were me like grappling with that question a bit, at least some of them. I think, you know, Transgender Deathmatch Legend 1 was written because I had the idea of like this cool trick-taking mechanic. I'd made a one-page fighting game with it. I thought, what would this be like as an adventure? And I think it does maybe say a bit of something, but it wasn't necessarily something I put in super detailed thought to the meaning of the game. Whereas I think here it's a lot more conscious about everything. I think I've said a lot of times, like my games are about like alienation and isolation. I think there is a fact of this game in some ways being about like existing in a hostile world. And in spite of that, it's interesting because I do feel in many ways like the world of Transgender Deathmatch Legend 2 is a bit more optimistic in some places than the real world, but it's still very hostile to your character. You are still someone who maybe has support, but doesn't have... You have a lot of friends, but maybe not a lot of support is actually a better way of saying that. Like, you'll meet allies across hexes, but they're not always people who are going to be in a position to do anything to actually help you. But I think that's often in, like, very broad strokes, and I think to some extent the fact that... I describe the game as, like, an anthology of scenarios rather than like a campaign. I think you could like string all of these seven together and make them about one character, but I think unlike games that are focused for a campaign, it's not necessarily rewarding that. These are different stories, and I think something like Informed Dissent, where you're going like one-on-one with like the medical establishment, you know, that's saying a lot about how trans healthcare works, especially in the UK where it doesn't run on an informed consent model at all. Things like Toxic Environment look at, you know, a lot of sort of anti-trans panic. And at the same time, then we have other scenarios which are more zeroed in on different things. Like Survival in the City, it to some extent is if you're looking deeper at it, you could say this is maybe a bit critical of wrestlers' failures to look after their own sort of collective interests. But broadly speaking, it's a riff on the film The Warriors, because I thought that was fun. Whereas Fight Forever, I think, is really about like relationships. It's specifically about like the relationship of you and one other specific character and how you're kind of defining each other. Someone said recently they think all of my games are about relationships in some way, which I'm like, yeah, you can see that. But I'm also like, that feels so broad, you could say everything's about relationships if you really wanted to dig into it. But I do think there's a thing there. I think it's, you know, I remember someone did ask me once, like, why the game insisted that your character was trans, beyond the fact that Transgender Deathmatch Legend is a fucking sick title. The reason yeah. for it is broadly yeah. like, no, well, I think it affects you. I think... Someone said to me once, or maybe it was a tweet I saw, I can't exactly remember, like being trans in the UK, you're kind of constantly taking low-level psychic damage. And I do think this is a bit like what the game is about. It is about, yeah, taking some psychic damage and, I guess, in the words of like Dusty Rhodes, still being there, still taking that damage and no-selling it and going like, okay, yeah. What else have you got? Because I'm still here.
Yeah, I love the... There's a line in one of your essays, and I might misquote it, but it was like, the difference between me and Caleb is I think, ironically, I've been punched more.
Yeah, yeah. No, that was an old line.
So succinct and so solid. It says so much.
It's the character of Caleb was so optimistic, and like she was explicitly canonically trans, but also... I talk a lot in depth about, like, what do you imagine this aspect of your kayfabe character? Because it's really fun to dig into the life of a person who, like, is really broad and doesn't exist. And so there were questions like, what's Kayla Fizz's favorite food or stuff? But there was this question, what's the difference? And, like, yeah, I've been punched in the face more.
There's another line from one of the essays that I really loved. I'm just going to quote it back to you, is, this isn't a game about being a superstar. This isn't a game about championships. This isn't even a game about winning. It's a game about bleeding. Bleeding for the things you care about, because that's what I've been doing all my life, and I'm not done bleeding yet. I feel like when I read that, I think going in, like, when I first started reading this game, I went in imagining a wrestler, like, entering the ring when, like, the music's going, everyone, like, hasn't been hurt yet, and, like, you're excited for, like, this ideal of a fight. When I read that, I was like, no, this game is about the wrestler walking away, like, limping away from the ring, bleeding. Like, that's the vibe of this, if that makes sense. It's, like, focusing more on that pain during, after, rather than the shiny thing that's coming into the ring.
Yeah, if I'm okay getting a bit pretentious,
please.
There's, like, a Roland Barthes essay about, like, the world of wrestling, and he said it was kind of like, I think he said there was, like, a triangle of things needed to, I might be misquoting them, but one was suffering. I remember it was like suffering, justice, and defeats. And there's a fun YouTube essay you can find where someone analyzes the match Samoa Joe versus Necro Butcher in the confines of that. And I think there is this aspect here of, like, suffering, justice, and defeat. I think in every one of these scenarios, you are someone who is pursuing justice, whether that's, like, something you're owed, whether that's on behalf of someone else. And within that, like, you're then going to experience a lot of suffering. Like, no one goes into any of these scenarios and doesn't take a hit. You're going to take a lot of punches. You're going to take a lot of hits. And sometimes you might, in some of these scenarios, you might even be losing those fights and having to come at them again from a different angle. And then someone is defeated. Like, there is always some sort of, like, climax to these things. It is inspired by, you know, wrestling a lot, but I do think a lot of the structures of individual scenarios are inspired by, like, a lot of martial arts films as well in some cases. I think I have Monkey Man on the bibliography, as well as, like, two Bruce Lee films and The Raid, as well as then, like, some wrestling matches or stuff. So
I was going to say there's some good good match recommendations on there that I saw.
I will have to, though. It's the grim thing. I'm going to have to, like, do a check right before I go to print of, like, have I recommended a match of anyone who has said something truly deplorable in, like, the aftermath of the Vince McMahon documentary or something? Like, got to do that last check.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
so Kayla, I love what you said about, and I want to dig in on this a little bit more. Somebody asked you the question of, like, why does everyone play a transgender wrestler? And it's something that has been a lot on my mind as a designer about choice of specificity in games. It's the games that I am really inspired by make specific choices about premise and character and things like that. And it's how I'm trying to design games more. My next game, I made the decision for it to be about brothers always, you know, like, whether you are a brother or not. And I want to dig into more of why that decision is important to this game. Like, other than, yeah, it is a badass fucking title, but I think there's something to what you just said about how all of these scenarios are fighting for justice, and there is something more meaningful about being trans characters fighting for that justice rather than, like, a mix of a bunch of different kinds of characters. So could you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, so the title Transgender Deathmatch Legend came to me, and I think it was a combination of a series of EPs by Left at London called Transgender Street Legend. And having heard the term deathmatch legend a lot, because it will get thrown around in wrestling, I think I came to that, and I think at one point it was an idea for, like, a short film I'd had that I was considering doing or something. So it was when this, I had this idea of, like, oh, what if I turn this one-page fighting game I made into beat 'em up? That title came back. And that kind of locked me into it. So back in 2022, when I wrote the game originally, it wasn't something I thought much of. I just thought, this is a cool title. This will make this game funner. It's way funner if you're having to be trans. But also, sometimes I do just write ultra specifically, and that is the interest there. But as I reevaluated the game then. There was never any scenario where I went back and went, actually, I don't think you need to be trans. But I was thinking more about, like, why is this decision meaningful in the present? Why does it matter? And I think definitely for some of those scenarios, it's like you're going up against forces that represent or directly are, you know, transphobic forces in society in a lot of cases. So that feels more meaningful there. There is, I think, you know, a sense of alienation to being trans in a hostile environment, probably like to being marginalized in a hostile environment, regardless of that access of marginalization. But that was at least like the aspect I was thinking about here. I think also some of it is maybe like a bitter resignation of the idea that like maybe I couldn't exist as an outspoken trans man who cares about justice in the British wrestling scene, but maybe in this game that fantasy can exist. You know, maybe that's overly harsh. It's at least how I felt, definitely in 2022, and then to some extent still in 2024, even though I do always wonder, like, if I had more ability, would I have been able to find, like, safer corners of wrestling or whatever? But, you know, I think specificity, I'm stumbling over that, is just more interesting. It was always a thing I was recommended as a comedian, like, your best joke is your most specific one. It's so much funnier to specify that when you're asking which actress would have played your mother in a film of your life, it's funnier if you're specifying late career Toni Collette than if you just said Toni Collette broadly. It's I'm giving you more of a starter point for a one-shot game when I say your character is trans, your character is a wrestler. These are the two things you have to go on. You've got a lot to build out there. You've got, you know, if you want to explore it, two entire different personas that this character occupies. So there's a lot to build out there, but I've given you the specific grounding. And, you know, if you're someone who's like, I don't want to play a trans character, you can just play a different game.
There are other games you could play.
The you can just play a different game. I wish people could see the visual of you can just play a different game into sip from mug was so ice cold. It was great. That rips. Yeah, play a different game.
I agree with Elliot on this and with you that having that specificity is such a... I keep describing it as a kindness to a player because it gets you so far into the game before you've even started. It's like, great, I don't have to do the work to get deep down into this like emotional core. It's kind of been just presented for me, and now I can start from that place of depth and go even deeper, and that's where you're going to find the most fun in these types of games. The further down, the more specific you can go.
Yeah, as like a person whose intro to role-playing did not involve like Dungeons & Dragons and has often bounced off a lot of like the experience of like dungeon crawling role-playing I've played when people have shown it to me, and to be fair, this might just be something about like GMs I've played with or whatever, but I've often felt a bit adrift where I'm like, okay, I've created this character, and it's like, you're now at the doors of this dungeon, and I'm always like, but why? You've given me no reason why I'm here, or how this connects to anything my character wants in life. Whereas, I don't know, I played Mothership recently, and it's like, oh yeah, you've been sent on this distress signal. It's like, obviously I have. That's my job. I'm a person in space. This was established when I made the character. And here it's like, you know, you're going to go beat up a promoter who owes you money, or you've got to go knock out these far-right goons who are trying to sabotage a show. It's like, oh yeah, of course, because I'm a trans deathmatch legend. That's what I do. Like, it makes things faster. I think it's in a way more immersive to be more specific, at least more instantly immersive.
100%.
So Kayla, as we sort of work our way towards a close, there's one aspect of this game that I really want to make sure I get to ask you about. And on the heels of our recent conversation with Johan Noor, I want to talk about the visual identity of this game, because I think it is so stunning visually. And you made the choice of going for photography, which I think is can be a rare choice in TTRPGs. So can you talk about sort of the visual identity you went for with this game?
Yeah, it's interesting. It was an interesting journey. Initially, I was planning to work with an artist. I had some different artists in mind. I was in early steps of like reaching out to and talking to. And to be honest, a change to photography kind of came by accident. I had money set aside that was going to be like my, you know, art budget or stuff for this. And I ended up in a situation where, for complicated reasons, I needed to clear some debt and I had to basically like spend my money. And with that money gone, I then had to look at like, how do I do this game? I can't afford to pay artists without, you know, I wouldn't want to like push someone to lower their rate. And I didn't feel confident based on how previous campaigns of mine had gone that like this would be enough of a success to pay someone post fact. Maybe it will be, but I couldn't guarantee that up front. So I was like, I need to go in a different direction. And the funny story there is in 2018, I met someone through wrestling training who is still a very close friend of mine. We dated for a time. So basically my prep for this game is I text my ex-girlfriend. I said, hey, do you want to go into a car park somewhere and beat each other up? Yeah, no, like she's one of my closest friends. She was down. We both knew wrestling. You know, we both are disabled and don't actively do wrestling, but like I personally have a very good muscle memory for everything. I bought a tripod. We set it up often on timer. So, you know, it's set timer, run into position, take photos, had some fake blood, had like some different props. And I think we got what probably came up around as like, I think we got around like 50 photos and they're all from the single shoot. They're us fighting in the dark, occasionally like masked up. And it was super fun to do. It looks really cool. It looks really unique. And it's something I'm interested in maybe exploring more because I do think like, yeah, bespoke photography definitely does look super cool. In previous projects I've worked on, I've done a lot of like collage stuff with photography or like digitally modified in different ways. I think that can be cool, but it was born from this like zero budget DIY desire. And yeah, I'm very happy with how it looks. And it's a weird thing where I'm like, I'm in this game so much now. I wrote it, I design it. It includes so much of my personal feelings and different essays, and my body is literally part of the art. I will say though, it is very weird. It's just a weird feeling to having to be writing alt text on an image and then go, how much detail do I give to describing my ex-girlfriend's uwu tramp stamp?
Hilarious. I feel like the lesson, there's a really good lesson here for, you know, indie designers listening where it's like, this was born from a budget reality, a DIY reality, as an indie, but it ultimately, like, as somebody who just like saw it first like this, I'm like, oh yeah, of course that was the decision. And it's like, you know, just a reminder that like sometimes working with what you got ends up being really fucking cool. So I love that.
I mean, necessity is the mother of invention is an idiom for a reason. It is true.
You just come up with that?
Yeah, just came up with it.
Oh, nice.
On an episode of an interview podcast I do, we were talking about like working in constraints in... Sometimes we're talking there about like when you're working in a system already, but here it works like working under constraints as like a mostly zero budget operator who does not have any other day job. And yeah, I think like the punchline we came up with there was constraints are fun, brackets consensually.
Yeah.
So as we kind of move towards the end of this interview, the thing that we need to talk about is the campaign for this game. Can you tell us a little bit more about the crowdfunding campaign you're doing, where people can support it, when, and what the rewards they can get are?
Yeah, so the campaign is going to launch on the 29th of October. It is on Backerkit. And it'll run for a month into November. The campaign is going to be funding like the physical print run of the book, which will be in two forms. So it'll be like the core book, where it's A5 landscape and it's wire bound along like the top horizontally, almost like a calendar, because everything's got this like landscape vertical spreads. I think it's a very sort of fun, usable, and also just quite like unique format. You're also going to be able to buy a box set version where you get the book, you get a deck of cards, a custom token, and the fighting styles in like four cards, which can be used. Additionally, I'll just sort of announce this here, I think.
Ooh.
One of the first stretch goals we're going to have is I'm going to create a supplement called Hot Rising Talents, which is going to be a series of pre-written player characters, and further goals are going to be adding individual stretch goal writers. So we have people like Jay Dragon, Jeff Stormer, Jess from Online. I've got in contact with some old wrestlers I used to know, so they might also be coming on board. That I've not heard back then, so I wouldn't necessarily make promises there. But like, yeah, that's going to be like the stretch goals. As well as that, like every game I sell, you can always buy like a signed version. You can, with the box set, you can also buy what I have promised is a Bloodstained version. And then in brackets on the Kickstarter, I have to be like, for legal purpose, Kayla wants to be very clear that the blood is fake. Additionally, like with everyone, you can be like donating to the eventual community copy. That's what I did with my latest game, Psycho Dungeon. From there, we got like a starting pool of 95, but hopefully we'll get more for Transgender Deathmatch Legend. And oh yeah, there's also an opportunity to get your name or a name you want to come up with on like a wrestling card. I'm going to put in the book's layout in the DIY sort of punk style. So that should be fun. The initial goal is for 2,500, but like, that's a goal where that sort of covers like a small print run and, you know, pays me for a month. If we go bigger, the game gets bigger. And also it's better news for me personally, the better it goes.
So. Support your game designers who are making cool games.
And get that box set. That sounds sick.
And get that box set.
Yeah. If we hit the Hot Rising Talents tier, the pamphlet or the supplement, I should say, gets added to the box set for everyone or is available as an add-on for anyone else.
Hell yeah. So, Kayla, our final question, which we ask all of our guests, is what are you bringing to the table? And this is just our cute way of asking for a recommendation for our listeners. It can be tabletop related. It can be entirely outside of tabletop. So what would you like to share with our listeners today?
Yeah, so what I'm bringing to the table, I'm going to be going to some conventions. I have two more conventions left this year. One is I'm going to be at is Dragon Meet, and I'm going to be there with multiple other people, including Laurie O'Connell, who's the creator of Hieronymus, Lichcraft, which is the game about trying to become immortal so you can get to an end of a 300-year trans healthcare waiting list. me and Laurie first met when we swapped our trans-themed games at a Dragon Meet like 2 or 3 years ago or something. I gave him Transgender Deathmatch Legend. He gave me Lichcraft. No money, changed hands. So I'd say check out his work. I wrote for Death Game. I wrote like a sort of creepy private hospital. And yeah, his work's really cool. You can find it at 12 Pins Press. And if you come to Dragon Meet on November 30th, we'll both be there along with many of the delights and darlings of the British indie scene.
Hell yeah. We'll put those links in the show notes below. So, Kayla, thank you so much for coming on Talk at the Table. You want to let people know where they can find you online if they're looking for you, and even more importantly, where they can find and back Transgender Deathmatch Legend 2.
Yeah, you can find my website, ratwave.uk, and there's a redirect at socials.ratwave.uk where you can find me on all of the social media I'm on. I'm on Tumblr, Instagram, Blue Sky. I'm on all of them, but annoyingly enough, I don't have the same name on any of them. I'm a variety of different things. So you go to socials.ratwave and you find a big link. Also, if you just search Kayla Dice or Ratwave Gamehouse on any of those things, I'm going to be the number one. You just need to do a bit of the legwork yourself. Ratwave.uk also has like links to a physical store where you can buy games of mine, links to my itch and other stuff. And if you go to gender.ratwave, you can back the game. Originally, I had it as deathmatch.ratwave.uk, but that meant I couldn't share the link on TikTok. So now it's gender.ratwave.uk. Back now. Back quickly.
And back at the highest tier possible.
We want finishing move backers here. Not opening spar. We want finishers here.
And if you want more gaming content from us, please join the Many-Sided Media Discord or sign up for the 20-Sided newsletter. Those are both linked in our show notes. Please rate, review, and follow Talk of the Table wherever you get your podcasts. And that's what the table is talking about. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.